When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It would be a Wolves fan, eh?
On goes Paul. People might yet win it here for Wolves. Flaps in the shot. What a goal!
Hello, everyone. Rich seems to be in a world of his own. For the audio listeners,
that's my internet.
Rich is...
I was going to say, that's one for the audio. One's lovely, off to a great start. My computer is having all fun and games this evening, so apologies, ladies and gents. Of course, guys, we are here to talk about yesterday's game against Brentford, but more importantly, what it's meant, which is me and Stu get another round of the Up for the Cup campaign. And boy, is it going to be a good one, Stu.
I mean, we've done this, what, 4 or 5 years of the Up for the Cup campaign? And every year it ends in abject failure and disappointment. And
yeah,
wearing cup shirts. I even wore my 1996 Nutmeg hat yesterday because it was so cold. Because it's got the crest on. The last time we won anything in this cup. So my only thought was, if we do go all the way now, do I have to wear that incredibly hot hat even in May? Because I want, yeah. when we got through to the semi-final, it was the year when I wore fingerless gloves like a hipster, and I still had to take them even to Wembley.
I mean, part of them would say yes, you do need to wear it. The other part would say is, does it really have an impact on the 11 players on the pitch?
If they can see me, I can see.
Maybe. That's my thought.
Yeah, the precipitation in the air. If it's all focused on me, it's not on them, is it? So there we are. Incubated that way.
Fab. I was going to say, also joining me, we've got Tom Gibson and we've got Jafo. Quick one with yourself, Jafo. We'll talk about obviously the game, the fact that a lot of people couldn't.
I think Rich is completely dying now. Well, he sorts himself out. Not in that way either. We're not that exciting. I think what Rich was going to say, Jafo, you had your good lady with you for the first time yesterday, and her experience of football for the very first time. Before we go into the lineup and the coverage and everything, she was one of the 24,000, I think, who were there experiencing that glorious game.
Oh yeah.
Let alone on what I informed her of first. What did she experience of soccer, and did it live up to her expectation?
To be fair, I thought, you know, going into it, she's watched Wolves before on the telly and that, and she's not been that interested. The game last night, she was shouting abuse at the Brentford players, shouting time wasting and everything. She was loving it. She was really getting into it. And yeah, as you mentioned, we talked about something before the game, that thing being Bovril. she managed to have two Bovrils last night. So loved it so much so that she wanted to buy some stuff today. So there you go. So, so English football is really for her. I think the NFL's in the bin now.
Yeah, you're not getting Bovril in South Carolina, are you? Let's be honest.
No. I think Old Bay is the closest thing, and that's just seasoning.
Well, when I was explaining to her, because she was saying, oh, Bovril, and she seemed to have an idea of the concept of Bovril, but she was like, oh, what is that? And I went, oh, well, it's like beef extract. And she just, with the look of horror on her face, she's like, what? And I thought, well, yeah, it's kind of, it's like drinkable gravy, and which wasn't helping the case. But now the fact that she loves it so much, oh, it's a success story. I'm taking that for me. But we should, something more serious matters. Were you always going to this game, Tom, or were you going to be one of the filthy losers who tried to watch it on a stream?
No, I was always going to go to it, yeah. Yeah, and I'm glad I did.
I mean, that is one, though. I mean, other than the Ipswich game, because the Carabao Cup's always like that. Mm. Did you expect that to be the case? Because I didn't. I mean, I home games, I'll be there anyway, regardless. But I thought, as a backup, that that would be there for everyone.
Yeah, I didn't expect it, really. I thought it would have been, you know, televised, really. Especially with it being two Premier League teams. But obviously not.
Yeah. And we have the story that the whole farce of the highlights package, not even be, well, package. It was just a few things sewn together that you'd have got on Central News back in the day. It was that indecisive. And I was trying to think, I can't remember a time either of this where, I don't know about you, Jafo, you've been slightly younger than me, where we've had to wait for highlights of an FA Cup game.
I can't, not off the top of my head, but like literally, like you saying it about it being like a central footage. I went on the BBC, I watched the game, so I'll see if it's actually slightly different. And not, they had Mikey Burrows in the commentary on the BBC highlights, so it's like there must have been like nothing, like not even they couldn't even scratch together some weird couple of guys from Albania to talk about it. Mikey Burrows all over the BBC, so there you go, that's something. Something positive that comes out of it. Beautiful voice all over there instead of listening to the usual, drip that you get on commentators nowadays.
When we should have known, when there was no tactics truck outside with like the broadcast vans, there was nothing there. But I suppose if they're not sending it anywhere, then there's no need to send it to the back to base. To just send it later on with the tapes.
But I mean, the only place it might have gone was only Stockley Park. But going on some of the decisions last night, which we'll talk about in a bit, but going on some of the decisions that were given, mainly the penalty, maybe they weren't getting it because what there was, it was a little bit dubious. I'm going to say that definitely for the list.
I mean, we'll come to that later on. But since Richard died, I mean, we'll just put that out there now. He could be dead. We don't know where he is. We've got no control. It's one of them. Lineups. Were you surprised by anything? Obviously, with the first game, Bentley was thankfully ill, so he didn't have to poison our goal mouth. Was there ever any doubt that Sarr get dropped for him?
Nah. I don't think so. I think Sarr's got his place in the squad firmly. I think when Bentley's played, he hasn't done enough, in my opinion, to play in these cup games where most second keepers would. So I think Sarr's done everything right, and he deserved to keep his place.
Yeah. I think it's reassuring as well that we are going with the number one keeper at all times. Which it's probably not good for him, but he knew the situation before he came in, and I'd rather do it this way and take things properly and seriously and than risk a ruddy situation again. But the man of the moment, Jafo, I know we've talked about him before, but did you expect the sheer amount of abuse that young Joe Hodge got on Twitter yesterday before the game?
No, not really. Because, I mean, when you talk about Hodge's done in the side before, he's never really put a foot wrong for somebody who's got his level experience, his age, and you know, and how he's played in the football. He's always put himself in that professional sort of way. You know, people like Jack Price, the people who played in the Wolves side before, he's always ticked up things over, done things in the right way, done the basics right. I just don't understand why he would get abused. I understand why people would be upset that he's starting over Mario Lemina, even with everything that's going on in Mario's life at the moment. But when somebody gets put in the side, obviously on merit, because there's no way that O'Neill wouldn't have put him in the squad if he hadn't been doing it in training, he hasn't been showing the qualities that he needs from him to come into the starting 11. then I don't understand why people would have that, because O'Neill should be trusted in this moment because of where he is with the results and the way that the team's playing. So if he thinks he's good enough, then everyone else in that stadium should. So they should just say, get off the kid's back. And after last night, actually, I thought when he was on the pitch, majority of the time, he probably played better than Tommy Doyle. I think he was a lot more tidy and kept the ball, whereas Doyle turned over possession, maybe not through his own fault sometimes, but say Hodge did well, and say people have got to let him play and trust O'Neill in the process.
Yeah, spot on. I think some of the passing in from both sides really kind of screamed the fact that both sides haven't played football for 10 days. It just looked a bit wrong all over the place. But Rich, are you resurrected? Are you alive?
I think so. I'm on my phone trying to get the laptop sorted at the same time, so you might see me jump between two very slightly different angles and a horrible echo. If not, we're on phone. But I think with Hodge, is it that he's a bit of a boring player? But like, and it sounds really harsh when I say it, but it's like, you know, he's not necessarily had a big standout game. His game is very much keeping the tempo, so to speak. And unlike, you know, Tommy Doyle, who has got a little bit more flair to him, whether it's just a bit more of an expansive passing range or the long range shots and things like that, they're, he doesn't quite have that dynamism. So I'm curious, to be fair, how it's going to pan out with Hodge. And maybe he is someone like Luke Kundle, who just needs that loan move to a championship, build up their stock, build up their experience, to kind of elevate their game. Because he's clearly got something about him, because Jaffo is right, he wouldn't be playing if he didn't. I know we have got shortages with Gomez, Traore being unavailable, Lamina. Obviously, he's not been around the club for a while. So he is kind of that fifth choice. But at the same time, they've done something else otherwise. Yeah. So it's a tricky one for me.
Yeah, we talked in the pub beforehand, me and Jaffo, about is Bellegarde kind of play there with him to kind of help him through? It's almost like a three-man midfield. And obviously that didn't happen because he played him up front, which was weird. But you mentioned him there about Tommy Doyle, and obviously he was the standout player in the first game. Thoughts on him, Tom? Because I mean, he kind of ran that game for 80 minutes on his own, whereas yesterday he looked a bit, I'm not saying ready, but there's something off with him.
I think with Tommy Doyle, I think yesterday I would agree he was a bit off. Some of his passes weren't coming off, but I think that was the case with both sides, really. Mm. I think there was a lot of times in the game where we get the ball, we play two passes, and then you give it away, and then they play two passes, and then they give it away. So, but I think for the price we can get him at, I think it's about 4.3 million.
Oh, yeah. It's
worth every penny of that. I think he'll only get better. I think every game, every player's going to have an off game eventually. You just got to hope he puts it right, really. And he done well from what he had. And he just had some passes which didn't come off, really.
Yeah. And he didn't get any hate or moaning, did he? Whereas when Hodge had the audacity to kind of misplace one, there was a few. But it's Wolves, it. We need a scapegoat. which almost seems back. I know we got the running order there. There's not really much in the way of talking about individual players other than the craziness of the game. Jaffo, first goal.
Yeah, it seemed to come out of nothing. Like, we could, for the first 20 minutes, we controlled the game. And you could just feel there's like a sense as soon as Brentford go forward, they're going to get a ball into the box. And because they've got the big fuckers, because it's a huge team, they're going to create something out of nothing. And who does it land to? The Irish Maldini, apparently. Nathan Collins. And yes, it's a cracking finish touch and you know, he's put it away straight underneath Jose Sarr, tries to get across. Fair play, he didn't celebrate, but still a fucking wanker, isn't he, for doing that, for scoring. But I think you put it the best on Twitter, to be fair, when you said it was pantomime-esque in the booze. Yeah. And I think that's what it was. I think it was just light-hearted. People look too much at it and think about the way that Nunes was treated. And it wasn't nothing like that. Nowhere near. Yeah, he's had a bit of a comedic reaction, and after a very good goal, I will say, I'll tell you that, you know, thinking back on it, he's took it really well, and you know, sort of happy that he's getting sort of a redemption arc after the first time we played him. And he had such a terrible performance, but fair play to him. You know, he's done more.
I mean, he can have a terrible performance in 3 weeks again if he wants to. I mean, there's nothing stopping him.
If you feel like, you know.
But it was. Did you boo, Tom? Because there was a few people laughing about it. That's why I said panto, because around me in the stable up, and there was as soon as people started booing, it was kind of twinned with laughter.
Yeah, I didn't boo him. The only player that I've booed pretty much since coming back that I can think of off the top of my head is Nunes, obviously because of how everything went down. But no, I don't feel like there's any need to boo him. I think even when we sold him, he said he didn't want to leave.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I didn't think he was good enough when we had him. I thought there was always a mistake in him. I thought he was a bit dozy, I think is the best word. But it had to be him to score, and he could have had two. But you know, he took it well, so fair play to him, but you know, still got through, so that's the main part about it.
Yeah, but and I think still got through is the understatement, because I was talking to about this with one of my mates of a different club earlier on, and he was saying, like, you look at that result and you look at coming back like that. I know this is going to be music to Gully's ears, but we wouldn't have done that under Lopetegui, because we didn't have the fight. This squad seems to have fight in abundance. And that equaliser from your man, Semedo Jafo, it was extra special, wasn't it?
I mean, he set it up, didn't he? Semedo knew. He knew what was going to happen. He'd read the script. He'd written himself. He called Harvey Weinstein and said, can we put the film on, ready? I've got it all written out, the tweet, where I'll see you, Molyneux, with Nathan Collins. And then, beautifully, what does he do? He shrugs off Collins, taps it in after, playing a nice little 1-2 with the goalkeeper. And then that picture, Collins on the floor, crawling, like Batterfimby Gomez when he used to do his lion celebration, looking exactly like that. Looking like an absolute clown. Fucking loved it. And Semedo loved it as well. Sure he went over and had a cheeky one thinking about that. But it can't happen to a nicer guy. His redemption arc, Semedo, in the eyes of fans, nothing's really changed. He hasn't really changed his performance and the level of performance over the last couple of years. But it's nice that people actually appreciate what he's doing and understand that we can't have a player who's not Matt Doherty at right back. You know, and I'll even say, like, early in the season, I came here and I talked about it. I thought maybe Matt should come in for a couple of games because he looked ropey at the start of the season. So I don't do. And say, so I'll even eat humble pie over that one and say, you know, I got it completely wrong. But I'm happy that Semedo is showing his qualities because he deserves it. And he's someone who's took a lot of shit off fans here throughout the years that he's been here. And he's, to be fair to him, he's never let his head drop. He's always just got on with it. And if he has dropped a clanger, he's gone back to it every week. Next week, he's started again. He's pushed himself. And, you know, you can only commend that sort of effort and attitude, because there's a lot of people who just would have not cared. And he actually, as a footballer, looks like he gives a shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think as well, like you say, that's the type of players that you want. And talking about, like, the fight, the team, especially from when we had Lopetegui, I think it's because, as well, the start of the season, we had our back against the walls. And I think that's what suits us best, really. I think when people do underestimate us, I think that's when we do play best. And Semedo deserves his success. And he took his goal well. And, you know, hopefully he can score more, really, because he has some chances, to be fair.
Yeah. over, what is it, over 50 games or something since his last goal. Just insane. But yeah, I think, has he scored at Molineux other than that Man United one? In when there was like 4,000 people there. So I think he might have got one, but off the top of my head, I can't think of one.
Can't remember them now.
I was going to say, I'm apparently back now through the magic of technology. So I've just been like a ghost behind the screen watching on like two separate devices. So I'm like literally playing catch up with my thoughts right now. But Semedo, the goal was just so eerily similar to a Matt Doherty goal as well, in terms of it, like in just breaking through. And it was a ridiculous ball by Kuna as well. And like it just, I mean, he'll come up in conversation again because he scored the winner, obviously. But I'm trying to think of a higher quality Wolves player that we've had in a long time in terms of how he's just consistently providing us that attacking output, whether it's goals or assists. He is just simply one of the. It sounds bad. It sounds like such hyperbole when I say he's one of the best Wolves players I've seen. But how he is he's one of the best creators I've seen at Wolves in a long time.
Yeah, when you're talking about Cunha, not Semedo here.
Either or, but yeah, we'll go for Cunha.
Yeah, I mean, you look at people like Giammattino and how incredible he was, and he never had the goal output. That was his problem. So you are talking about someone who's looking like an actual striker now, even though he's not a striker, apparently. But he's so much more. It's almost like if we just did play him up front, he'd be wasted because he's got everything else to him. Mm. And this Cunha role that he has in the team, which is not a specific spot in the formation, it's perfect. It's absolutely perfect. But no other player in the squad could play that role.
No.
Which kind of says everything about the man.
It says a lot about what O'Neill's done with him and trying to mould him into this shape, that he's getting the goals and assists now. And I think there's a stat going around that he's had 10 goal involvements in the last 11 games. And
yeah.
It's this fruit now. There's fruit that's being given to us. And it's all coming into fruition. Everything, all the hard work that's coming to players, he's coming out for a player who... When he signed for Wolves, I mean, we all looked at him and go, that's a lot of money. That's a hell of a lot of money that he's winning. It felt like sort of a January transfer gone wrong sort of thing where you paid out the odds. But you look at him at the moment, he's worth every penny. And like you say, Rich, you've got somebody who can create something a little bit different. But it raises the question, after last night with Bellegarde playing at striker, do we really need a high quality number nine who can play in there and have a little bit of pace. We just need something different just for that exact moment because the balance wasn't quite right last night.
Mm.
And for everything that we did well in getting the result, something wasn't quite right about the way that team was set up. And there was just a little bit lack of pace, a little bit over 10, 15 yards. We'd lost the ball too much. And it was a lot of the time where Sarabia would pick the ball up or Bellegarde and they'd want to turn back on themselves. And that kind of just slowed everything down. And I think that's the main talking point that comes for me at the game is that how can they either identify somebody to come in or have somebody within the squad who can do that role and be able to carry the ball. Because as soon as Pedro Neto comes into that side, you see that a little bit more. But he couldn't do that. He couldn't play in that central position as what we'd need.
No. Yeah. I think there was he's not on the thing, but I think Doherty was fine yesterday. I think people are being a bit harsh. I don't think he did anything particularly wrong considering he's playing out of position. More of a worry is who stolen the real Hugo Bueno and can we have him back, please? Because he looks broken. when he came on, he looked broken. And there's clearly something. He looked like if he's got a hip problem or something like that, because he doesn't look like he's moving properly either. But that whole thing of having no real wing back on that side in that kind of hybrid formation where Anuri has been playing as well, it's like, well, if we've got nothing there, then we know for the fact that the ball is Doherty's going to turn back in and cut back on himself every single time, then you ain't going to get no fluidity through the middle either, are you? Because it's all a bit lopsided. But again, it's horses for courses, I suppose.
Yeah, and Doherty isn't the same Matt Doherty as he was, you know, pre-Spurs move. Or even, like, you know, we joke when we've seen him play left wing back a few games previous when, like, oh, yeah, but do you remember when he got player for season? It was 7 years ago. and he's not that same player, is he? Unfortunately, and he can't quite support as much as we need to. Bueno's situation's worrying. Part of me just hopes he has just got a niggle, but they need him to be on the bench. But, you know, the drop off between Ait Nouri, you know, pre African Cup of Nations to, you know, what are your other options? You know, Matt Doherty, who is, I'm not sure how I'd feel about him playing in a league game, if I'm perfectly frank. Bueno, I can't remember last time I sort of put in a good game. Or you go Toti Gomez at left wing back, which, again, not convinced by. So it's really tricky with that left side problem over the next couple of weeks, isn't it?
Yeah. I think that was where the danger was coming from as well, from their point of view. It's almost the entire game. It was because Semedo being Semedo, and some weird clearances going on throughout the entire game, to be fair, from everyone. But definitely down our left hand side, where, I mean, I wouldn't have a problem playing Toti Gomez there if you're going to play them three in the middle like we did towards the end. Dawson, Kilman, and other Bueno. I wouldn't have a problem with that. But it's better than playing Doherty there if we've got the option to, because he's just, we lose too much up front. Not defensively. Defensively, it's fine, but
yeah,
going forward, we lose too much from him.
Yeah, I think that's it. Like, it's that getting the ball through the transitions, and, you know, the thing that Ait Nouri is so good at is working in those tight spaces and almost drawing players in to, you know, drag them out of position. You know, a lot of Ait Nouri's best work isn't in the final third. It's kind of in the middle of the pitch, or even like very much in his own half, isn't it? But all of a sudden, you know, he'll break 10, 15 yards and, you know, go past, you know, take three players out of the game with, you know, a short dribble and a pass. And Semedo can do it on the other side as well, usually in a slightly less flashy manner. But you say the drop off of your backups is really felt, and fortunately there is enough quality in this Wolves side and enough grit and determination to, you know, when we go behind, they've got just about enough about them. And yeah, unfortunately we conceded another, didn't we?
I mean, I was convinced. I mean, I would put everything on it that was offside, and it's probably got to be the closest one that I was wrong over, because it looked yards offside to me. I mean, obviously, yeah, on the highlights you look at it and it doesn't look that bad, but where I was almost in line with it, and it looked offside, and for him to take so long. I mean, I understand now because of how close it was, but it was like knife through butter thing, and we haven't been exposed defensively like this for a long time. I don't know what's going on there, Tom.
Yeah, it was an interesting one, to be fair. But I don't know about you guys, but even when we did go like 1-0 down, and then when we went 2-1 down, I always kind of knew, like, you just knew we was going to still go for it. Like, you knew we was going to have some sort of attacking threat. I mean, definitely through, like, Cunha, for example, because of how much he drives us forward. But under Gary O'Neill, I think, even if we do 1-0 down, I think we're always going to have a threat. We're always going to have more shots. And there's a different type of belief under Gary O'Neill, I think. I think a lot of people would agree that he's brought a very much clinical side to us, I'd say. I think with the chances we have, we are looking at getting a lot more goals from what we create.
Yeah, I mean, you only have to go back like 18 months under Bruno Small to think how naive and well, there was no guts, was there? As soon as we conceded, that was it. Game over, done. There was no chance. But now there's a chance, like we mentioned earlier. There's a chance every time we go forward, and there is. I think that having belief in the stands as well helps. The nervousness is not there anymore. It might be in 11 days, but but overall, you like you just said, Tom, that there does seem to be a belief that's back, and it's a weird feeling.
Yeah, definitely. I was talking to someone yesterday, and they said like they feel that Gary O'Neill's bringing like good times back, like similar to how Nuno did. I still think Gary O'Neill's got a lot to do before we can put him really in the same sentence as what Nuno done with us. But I think in terms of the belief and getting behind the group, I think a very much family community feel has come back to Molineux, definitely.
Is Rich dead again?
There we go. I was going to say, more importantly, I guess, and it was almost a shame it wasn't the winner in a way, but Nathan Fraser getting the equaliser. And it was nice that obviously, you know, his first goal was a bit of a deflection, but there was no sort of deflection involved in this one, was there?
No.
I think it was he took it brilliant. I think it's a proper striker's finish, hard and low. I can't even begin to imagine how he must feel being a local lad as well. It would put the cherry on the cake if he scored against West Brom. But yeah, I think he's a brilliant prospect. I think we've got a real good player on our hands. I don't think he's going to be the answer to the number nine that we need for the centre forward. I think he could do with a loan move probably to save him sitting on the bench here. But I think he's had, is it three games and he scored two goals? Something like that. I mean, you know, his numbers are coming up, and as I say, local lad, young kid, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, they were talking on the official podcast after the game, and Naylor mentioned the B word and compared him to him, and it's like, well, you can kind of understand because of his body shape's similar-ish. I know you can say, oh yeah, because he's a bloke and he's kicking the ball, but there's an essence of, like you said, Tom, there is a natural finisher in him, which, I mean, we spend 35 million on wasters who pretend to be strikers who that doesn't happen for. Yeah, this kid comes in, and like you said, other than Ipswich, where everyone was shit. Look at the game against Blackpool, superb little cameo, and then that yesterday. I mean, to go from that goal and the passion, and just because he's from here, the fact that he's a Wolves fan as well does help. Yeah. It just adds to it. And the fact that when the club played that thing of he's signing on as an 8-year-old, that was amazing, that photo. But you go from that to then the chance he had straight after Jaffo. And you think, yeah, if that had gone in, the place would have gone off.
I was gone. When he scored the first time, I was already gone. I was halfway down the row. I was so happy for the kid. But, like, yeah, the touch, and it was, the thing is, it's everything set up. It was like poetry in motion with the second one. It was a lovely touch up on his body, and I thought, you've got to slide it away now. And you know, he's unlucky, but, you know, it's been said here. It's great to have a local lad, somebody who's in and around the side, gets a couple of goals every season. If he does progress, it's brilliant. It's everything's positive from here with him. But having someone who's comes from Wolverhampton, bags a few goals, important games, I think, as Tom says, if he gets one in the Black Country Derby, that's it. He's cult hero forever, especially if it's a winning goal. It cement his whole legacy.
Yeah. I was going to say there is a story in the making with him, isn't there? And next Sunday, what impressed me kind of most about the goal was his movement to get into a position, because as soon as Sarabia broke, he made an absolute beeline to get to that right-hand side and try and open up the pitch. And then, you know, the ball breaks the corner and he holds his position. So instead of kind of running, like making a run into the box and almost kind of getting in the way, it takes a bit of nerve to kind of almost stay in your position sometimes and actually stay in the place where you need to be. And, you know, whether that's instinct, whether it's good coaching or whatever, it could be very, you know, you see it kind of more often than not when a player doesn't kind of go in the right position, stuff like that. Unfortunately, he benefits from having, you know, a very creative player in Kuna to, you know, pick the pass as well, of course. But yeah, what a goal, what a moment. And then rolling extra time. It's back and forth, isn't it? And yeah, and Wolves get a penalty. And there was a bit of handbags. We'll go for handbags, I think, at best, because I know it's a little bit caveman. I don't half love it when our players back each other up sometimes. And seeing Semedo just barge through players to protect Neto did hit me in the feels, I'm not going to lie.
I mean, I couldn't believe that I was the only one who saw what happened. Like, Andy, wait, let's be honest, that the graphics on the screen yesterday were ridiculous. And I don't know if it was just because it's an FA Cup and it's a different company doing it, who knows. But to not let anyone know what the hell was going on. Like, there was no... Because normally you'd say potential red card four and then the player name would come up in the Premier League. That didn't happen yesterday. So in the stuff, I was going to say people watching at home, but no one was. maybe that's why they couldn't be asked. But no one had any idea other than right in front of us in the Steve Ball Stan Cullis corner where somebody has come pairing in like using gladiators, pushing someone in the back. Andy had no idea from the South Bank. No idea what had happened. Like, he texted me. And I thought I'd kind of glanced away and I just saw someone and. I thought, yeah, someone's pushed someone over. It was very silly.
What helped the situation was it was very much behind referee's back as well. So you had sort of these two kind of hot points happening at the same time. So you had all the Brentford players crowding referee, not getting booked. And then you always had this like almost like a wrestling thing like, oh, look over there. He's like elbowing in him. I was like, yeah, perfect.
Yeah, it was ridiculous, wasn't it? And it... The fact that it took him so long to look at it. I mean, you look at it once and you think, yeah, it might be a yellow card if you're being picky. But the fact that they'd started it again on the back of a blatant dive, by the way. right in front of you. You can't see it. It looks more of a penalty on the highlights than it actually is. And it's not a penalty.
I think, yeah.
But fucking Tata.
Yeah, part of me is just like, I wonder how I'd feel if it were I. Unfortunately, like we've had enough kind of pops at Wolves, you know, sometimes not playing the game this season and not kind of, you know, being a bit cheeky with it.
It's Thomas Frank. He's a football terrorist and he's
genuinely, he's one of my least favourite managers in the Premier League. And, you know, part of me hopes they go down because of him. But unfortunately, I've got about four other teams who are in that boat at the moment. So, I mean, I'm in between a rock and a hard place, to be honest. But, Kuna knocks away the penalty. I think it caps off great performance in terms of, you know, what he does, sees us through. And Kuna said after the game, lots of fans said we needed to win because it's a big derby. I'm very happy to play derbies. I've played Brazil, Argentina, Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid, and I really want to play Wolves, West Brom and make history. I think we rank up there, to be honest, in terms of some of the derbies he's played in there, to be honest. But yeah, it brings us on. Actually, I was going to say beforehand, a nice little, I love a light-hearted story in a game, was the fact that there was an officiating injury during the game. So Wolves fan Ross Bennett stepped up to fill the gap of fourth official after a linesman was taken ill just before extra time. You don't see it often enough, but you do love to see it. Like, I wouldn't want it in a league game, but I think FA Cup replay, perfect. Something like that.
I mean, something like that happened to Portsmouth, didn't it, earlier in the season?
It happened really recently.
Yeah, and that was in the league.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the fact that he's wearing his own tracky bottoms as well. That's the best thing about him.
I was going to say that there was a look to it, like part of him knew it could happen. And obviously it's like just, he's got his boots with him, he's got his whistle, you know. But anyway, so obviously Wolves are through to the fourth round against West Brom. Away from home, we've got a amazingly early kickoff a week on Sunday. We will be doing preview stuff next week, so I don't kind of want to go right into the bones of the game and what we're kind of all expecting from it. But one thing I was going to ask yourselves is, what does this game mean? Oh, I was going to say mean for you personally. I was going to kick off with a clip from Little Dan. So from the last time we played them, we were talking about, it was, you know, who don't we like, who's played for the Albion. And Hoops, who was presenting at the time, asked a fairly simple question, which was, ever any players you secretly admire? And Dan expressed his true views on West Brom. And I'll throw back Shevin with you now, because I think it resonates a lot with people.
And any players that you are either hated, I know the play for Albion, I get that, but just to add an extra dimension, or any players that you grudgingly respected as well over the years?
No respect. Makers. There's no respect. There's pure hatred for these bastards. Everything that I despise in life, they sum up in a flipping blue and white striped pigeon badge wearing ensemble of just disgustingness. I hate that club. I hate everyone that's involved with them. Like you just mentioned there, Paul Robinson, absolute rat of a footballer. Mm. When he was in an Albion shirt, breaking Ebanks Blake's leg at flipping Blues. Same with Matt Carbon, breaking George Undar's leg. Lee Hughes, horrible. Just a horrible club. Just fuck them off.
Gold. Just brilliant. 10 out of 10. No notes. Brilliant. But I know, Stu, I know you've been posting a couple of things online in the last, well, 24 hours in terms of, you know, obviously the lines between banter and offensiveness and things like that, but there's a genuine spice and aggro to this derby. You know, the fact that it is on at quarter to 12 sort of surmises it, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it's, I mean, for me, I've gone backwards and forwards over it for over the years as well, because there was a time where we didn't play them, obviously when we were awful and they were up there doing in their Premier League stint where they did fuck all, so who cares. 8th is an achievement apparently, but yeah, but there was a time where I hated Blues more than them because they were who we played all the time. Recently it's been Villa, but it's always going to come back to them, like, and it's weird though, because at the same time as detesting them and hating them and knowing what they do to us all the time, which is why I didn't want this game to happen, and I'm not even saying, everyone knows my thoughts on the blue and white curse. It's just, it is what it is. It's got to end sometime, surely. I mean, it hasn't happened in the 100 years of our existence, but just once, it does happen every once in a while. It drops a little bit. I don't think, thinking of it off the top of my head, in our lifetime, there's never been a bigger gap between our quality and theirs at all. Even in the Premier League, we're now fans. They were still in the same league as us.
The gap between us at that point wasn't huge, was it? Realistically, no.
So it's one of them, and in a way, it's strange because I'd rather go for a pint with one of them than a Villa or a Blue Nose, but not in the next 11 days, not a chance. And I think that the funny thing about it, the fact that as soon as anyone's attacked this derby, we've like both come together across the divide to shake hands and abuse everyone else together. And that it's utterly bizarre. But this game is evil. Like I said in that tweet, it's the definition of evil. The fact that he has to kick off in the morning, it's that bad. And I think that Sunderland Newcastle was bad the other week. And that's where all I said was, for people who didn't see it, don't be homophobic, don't be racist, everything else, fair play. Death threats, bestiality, incest, all the accusations you want. It's all banter. It's all a bit of a laugh. It's not real life. Don't be a dickhead. Just do it online. It's all fun and games. And that's what it is. But from going from not wanting this game, I now can't wait. And the fact that, the tickets are going on sale in the morning, I've already said that I'm doing nothing between 9 and 4:15 in the morning. Just said tickets are going to be booked. Simple as that. Work and wait.
It's such a fascinating derby. I mean, one thing I will say, and look, there's still stuff I want to talk to. I've delayed proceedings long enough today. But saying Wolverhampton's not in the black country. Fuck it, let's get into it. Because it is. It is, unfortunately. Look, I mean, there's a couple of different ways you can view it. Look, we could do it on like the greater, you know, region west of Birmingham and the economic boroughs that now exist and have existed for multiple decades now. Or we could go off coal seams that developed 300 million years ago. I personally think we go off, you know, the structure that's kind of developed in the last 20 odd years in terms of how it is. And also, Bilston and Wensfield both get classed as the Black Country. Both of them are in Wolverhampton. Yeah. So, and
the parish map of 1830 has both Wolverhampton, Bushbury, Tetnell, Warsaw, West Brom, Tipton, Sedgley, Handsworth, Aldridge, Warsaw, Black Country. Stop being silly bastards. I don't know. They've got a Birmingham postcode if they want to play this game.
Yeah.
They've got a stand named Birmingham Road.
I mean, I'm not going to get... I mean, we've got Waterloo in ours, so... I'm not going to get into postcodes because, you know, you can't... that's class in Aberystwyth with in Shrewsbury then. And, you know, with... But it's just... Wolverhampton is in the Black Country.
Full stop.
I think it is like fairly defined now. And even if you go off the geographic stuff, it still touches upon it. It's still classed as a wider region. I also say that because I work for a company with fucking Black Country in the title. So this is genuinely about as angry as I'm going to get about it, because it is just fucking. It's just a weird stick to beat us with.
It's not even like, anything to beat. You know what? It's just wrong.
We've all caller singles. Say we got six fingers, but don't come here and be saying that.
Yeah. I mean, we've already got a retort for that. I mean, we do know that we'd all rather be a dingle than a cunt, which is simple as it is.
Yeah.
And that's going to be sung hot, loud and proud on ITV in the morning. So,
are you going to be hearing that? There's going to be... I feel sorry for the American listeners who have to hear that at, you know, 3:45 in the morning or whatever it will be, as they're, you know, making sure we've got a transfer fund.
Yeah, exactly. Josh has got to pay for our...
They've got to get our players in somehow. And if it isn't through the shipping costs, I don't know what it's going to be. But look, we know how important this game is. I mean, and we also know how bad it's been in terms of the Black Country derbies, in terms of our performances over recent years as well. And Tom, you've got to hope that you're right. The quality is there with this team now that we could genuinely leave a mark on this game.
Yeah, I think I've always said this, though. This is a problem. We are, quality-wise, on paper, we are 100 times better than them, I believe. But derby games are completely different to any other game. I've always said that because there's a lot more fight in them. You know, you don't have to be a brilliant footballer to win a derby. You just have to be up for a fight, pretty much. But I think if there's any time where we're going to get a result. I think and I hope and I pray that it's now because of the quality that we've got. I mean, I'm gutted that João Gomes is out for it. I'm not sure if Ryan ain't, could I know he'll be back? Or no. Is he, will he be after?
Still AFCON, yeah.
Yeah, so with Ryan Aitnori and Hwang Hee-chan, I mean, if we went there with a full-strength squad, I'd be probably a lot more confident, but I am still confident that we can get a result. And it's just the record, really. It's the record of results that we've had in the past. That's what knocks people's confidence.
Let me just say as well that Kim's just brought it to our attention, or Dan has in the group, that the Duke of York in town will be open from 6 a.m. on that day. Just to wet everyone's whistle, just to be safe.
It's going to be carnage. I mean, part of me, and I appreciate I am saying this, and I can feel Stu looking at my shirt and jumper combination when I say this. Like, if you can't control yourself not to be a dickhead at the game, then maybe don't go. But it's also a Black Country derby, so I'm conflicted. Just don't be a dickhead. Have fun. As Stu said, it's not real life. It is a bit pantomime. It's got, you know, with a level of testosterone chucked into it. But I hope we fucking smash them. I hope it's like an embarrassing levels of, like, not just a 2-0, a professional job. No, I want it to, like, genuinely have them crying in a corner. You know, Kuna doing, you know, standing on the ball kind of levels of embarrassment. That's my aspiration for the game.
Would you rather us go and smash them, or would you rather us like have like a last minute winner or something?
Ooh.
No, just embarrass them. Yeah. They deserve it.
Yeah, because to get a last minute winner is nice, but it implies that we'll have gone toe to toe with them, or we'll at least not separated it. Because a last minute winner is good, because you'll get genuine limbs there. But I think if we're able to get more than three or more goals, thing is, we are never going to be able to match like the 5-1. Like, the circumstances will not be there at this point. Unless we're in the same division, it just ain't happening. But it's what could we do now for this? And the COVID ones are sort of lost in, really. Like, the two ones in that COVID season, I was going to say it's not really don't count. They very clearly do. But I think in terms of, like, recent defeats and performances, people will hone in on that. That is, like, an era-defining game in this derby. On both sides of the table. And I'd be fascinated. What scoreline would it be have to be, or what kind of performance would it have to be defining for this kind of era within the club's history?
I mean, if we're like 3-0 up after half hour and just toy with them like a cat with a tiny pigeon, like on their badge, if we do that and just take the piss for an hour, that'd be amazing. Just because of their solemn little faces, and like, what can they do then? That's being embarrassed at home like that when they've given you the big one for what, the best part of 12 years, over something that then led us to go all the way down to come all the way back again and have the best year of our lives in League One. Cheers, guys. Which is why I've got that mug with the CFAX 5-1, because what it led to was amazing. They're never going to have that, regardless of what they have. They caused us so much suffering that it was so much better when we fixed it. They're not going to have that. Reverse it round. So if we go there, take an early comfortable lead and then just piss them off for an hour, that would be bliss.
Yeah. I'd quite like going at half-time winning 1-0, and then second half really kind of open up the floodgates. so to speak. So it's not just like, you know, when you get 2-0 up, you can't go, oh, okay, game's dead and buried, 60 minutes. But no, we keep pushing on. That's what I'd like. I know we've had Brandon in the comments saying 4-0, Fraser getting to Kuna and Santi. Oh, that's just not like, I'll tell you who I think will get a goal is someone like Lamina.
You just the shit out from Lamina. He'd be up against the crowd doing everything. He would. He's that guy.
He will break a rib cage thumping his chest. I can sit. Sar's going to give him big licks in it. Like genuinely. There is so many potential narratives, and you know there's a lot of, I guess, sort of common history at the moment. Obviously we've got Dawson, they've got Jed Wallace as well, so and they've just signed Andy Vyman, who of course scored the winner for us in a fourth round of the FA Cup against a high level opponent. So genuinely I don't want it to happen, obviously. But the script of Vyman scoring, I don't actually. Can he play?
I was going to say I saw something that he could be good for, but I don't. I'm not too sure.
Yeah, without sort of checking, there is a narrative in there as well. So, but before we play the Albion, we also have to play the other Albion, Brighton. And as Stu said, we are cursed against the blue and white stripes. And what better week to get over it than? You know, the last weekend in January in 2024. Let's be honest, our record against them is fucking awful. Out of the last 11 games, we are just shocking. We've won two out of the last 11 against them. In terms of the last three games, we obviously lost 4-1 to them at the start of this season. In April, we lost 6-0 to them. And we lost 3-2 to them in a very bizarre game last year as well, where I don't quite know how we genuinely managed to stay within one goal of it. It was genuinely, they deserved to be about 4-5-0 up in that game, and we did not deserve two goals. But a bit of, this might just be my toxic positivity now from Gary O'Neill. I don't think there's an awful lot in it.
They have they've come to a bit of a crossroads, haven't they? Mm. All their superstars. I mean, that saying that Mitoma has got like his usual torture routine ready for us. But they're not, they do seem to have dropped off a little bit this season compared to where they've been the last few. And I have been to that place where we like the 1-0 own goal, and when we won over Christmas last season. Was it last? No, 2 years ago. So it does happen there. But since they've been this kind of football hipster force, we've got nowhere near them. But again, the tides are changing. Tesco week is going to be a successful week.
I mean, quick, a bit of a sideways step for a second. Score update on the Nottingham Forest game. They've gone to extra time. Blackpool, we're 2-0 down, pulling back to 2-2. So Nuno still loves the FA Cup, quite clearly see. But yeah, bringing back Red to Brighton. I mean, I'm hopeful. I mean, yeah, I'm going to be there. First time I've been to the Amex, so excited to go somewhere different. But taking the lady with me, so hopefully she can keep that 100% winning streak going and destroy that curse that we've had recently. Because I think, like you said, they've sort of been this football hipstery sort of team, and they've played beautiful football. It's kind of gone against everything that we've kind of done. We've kind of been this boring for the past.
Pragmatic. We'll go for
function over flair.
Yeah, I think, and we've kind of been caught out by teams who actually want to play football. But with O'Neill, you know, and the way I think the best way to describe to anyone who I talk to about what we're doing now under O'Neill is relentless. Now that's kind of the best word to describe the way that we play football, because I think we were talking about tournament earlier, when we get a couple of goals, we just keep going. They never stop. They always want to do more. They want to be more. And it just plays into the hands of so much that we've done. And Brighton are now, they've lost Caicedo. They lost for, you know, I don't think Mitoma are with Japan. So win the Asia Cup. Oh, so
that's a good point.
He's not going to be there, but hopefully they're just not quite clicking in the same way. You know, I'll say all this now, it's smashed again, but praying that something clicks for us and something's going in a different direction. But I'm extremely hopeful that we'll get a result there. And even I'd take a draw. I would, because it's a step in the right direction at an opponent when we normally struggle.
Yeah, I'm bizarrely confident. And maybe it's just the last game. I think Neto coming back to fitness is a key one and really needs to start. I think for a point you alluded to earlier, just following the game against Brentford, we do Bellegarde and Sarabia don't quite offer us that dynamism to really kind of stretch defence at the moment. Whereas I think between Kuhn and Neto and one of Sarabia or Bellegarde, I think we've kind of got that without Hwang in at the moment. So I don't know, I feel like we've got that momentum at the moment, and that's so key. And we're talking like goal difference to the side, we're only 3 points behind Brighton.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I think you can get perceptions in the league and about how else a team like Brighton do. And I think we sort of said it before, probably when we lost 4-1 to them. Like, people seem to have this impression in the wider mainstream media that, you know, Brighton are this brilliant football team and almost seemingly never lose and always win. It's like, but they wouldn't be in the position they're in if that was the case.
No.
So it's clearly like something that kind of we're cursed as a club against stripy teams. But I don't know, it just something kind of goes, there's going to be a point. And I do think that now we're playing with the back three, it's looking settled. Who, no matter if you're playing Santi or you're playing Dawson, we understand our movements a bit better going forward. Because even in that 4-1 game earlier this season, we weren't awful, we just had a fucking nightmare 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Beyond that, actually, we were creating chances. We were looking good. We were looking positive. We just completely broke down for 10 minutes, which fortunately is all they needed.
But even you compare the team from then to now, and it's night and day difference.
Mm.
We've got backbone now. I mean, there, yeah. we were more like seahorses. It was just like completely pointless. I mean, can you, as an aside, can you put this comment from Still With Thee on the screen about Little Dan?
I saw Little Dan at a pub and it looked like he was going to bite me, so I didn't say hello. Harsh. We'll go, just that's one for a mug. As I say, the follow-up, I'm like a foot taller and I still felt him, like he was looming over me. Yep.
Yeah. Like, right. Wolves, like wolves over a pigeon, which is what next week will be.
Exactly. I was going to say, just to wrap up the show, there are fixtures going on in the league. They're doing this weird thing. I say weird thing, very actually sensible thing now, to kind of give a bit of a break. So we had, you know, half the fixtures last weekend, half fixtures this weekend. So in terms of the other games going on, we've got Arsenal Palace, we've got Brentford Forest, Sheffield United West Ham, Bournemouth Liverpool, and of course us. I think probably the most interesting one for us is maybe that Brentford Forest. I don't know, they're a bit below us now, but or maybe the Sheffield United West Ham, and really kind of, you know, push us into that mid-table position.
Yeah, Sheffield United is the one I was looking at there, because when you look at West Ham again last night, and Ole Moyes is getting a bit of flack for that result, and rightly so, to be fair. And they are a bit up and down, and Sheffield United have got one of the best players in the Championship last year. Was it last year or the year before he moved away? They've signed him now, so it's quite an intriguing game, because West Ham are so West Ham, they could be awful for 89 minutes and then just win.
Yeah. I mean, that we talk about, you know, Wolves being functional over Flair back and, you know, I mean, that just, they just anticipate, it's, they've just got such a healthy knack of just getting wins. And I think, you know, obviously, if you watched Gully's tactical analysis of the Wolves West Ham game, and you know, he laments West Ham quite a bit, and I'm kind of very much sure, yeah, but they scored three goals. They do enough to get goals, don't they?
They're not a good side, apparently.
But yeah, it's sometimes hard to not to be a good side and be 20th in the league after 20 games. But then again, I sometimes think the same thing about Aston Villa. Be honest, but I go, I genuinely don't quite know how they are third in the Premier League. You know, two points off the top. Like with playing an extra game, but it's what happens when you win football games on a regular basis. You know, it's, but yeah, so interesting games, fellas, coming up very quickly. Should we do some score predictions for Brighton?
1-1.
1-1. How about you, Jaffo?
I'll go. I'll be confident. I'll get 2-1 away win.
Ooh, that very confident. You got lady luck on your side, so you. Tom, how about you, mate?
I'll go 1-0. I'm going to say Cunha to score.
Yeah, you know what? I'm feeling lucky. I'm going to go 1-0, but I think it's going to be Neto. It's my shout, and that's going to sort of drive us through this, you know, sheer positivity from Monday to Sunday. But we're going to be back on Tuesday to talk about the Brighton game, and also be back later in the week to do a preview of the Albion game as well. We'll obviously be doing lots of social stuff and hopefully a few more videos and stuff like that in the next week or so post Brighton, around the Albion game as well. So I think, fellas, it's going to be a very exciting week down WV, isn't it?
Yeah, I described it as like it's Albion Advent. It's just countdown every day.
Oh, it genuinely does feel like, you know, I say from a comms perspective, it is just going to drive the Midlands media for the next week, to a point where it feels like, unless this, like, if we lose to Brighton 1-0, no one's going to care.
No
one is going to give an absolute shit. You know, whether it's fans or media. I mean, like, it was a struggle, obviously, for people care about a Brentford game because it wasn't shown anywhere. But, yeah, I think people just go, cool, right, move on. Let's focus on the big one. So, yeah, we'll be on at Wolves Fancast on here, there and everywhere to keep you updated, of course, on Brighton and the Boggies. But until then, it's goodbye from Jaffo.
Good
evening. It's goodbye from Tom. It's goodbye from Stu.
Positivity. Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. See you next time.